Chapter 2. Corey's instincts were correct, although he didn't know it at the time. While infantry under General George H. Thomas, nicknamed the Rock of Chickamauga, made the assault on Rocky Face Ridge, the rest of Sherman's army was swinging south. In that direction, Rocky Face terminated in an undefended opening known as Snake Creek Gap. On the other side of the gap was the town of Resaca, which, like Dalton about 20 miles to the north, was an important stop on the Western and Atlantic Railroad. Sherman's plan was to pour through Snake Creek Gap, capture Resaca, and cut the railroad so that Johnston's Confederates would be stranded to the north. From there, it would be a simple matter to encircle the Southern Army and destroy it. Unfortunately for Sherman, a sizable group of Confederate reinforcements was being led by General James Canty toward Dalton and had stopped to rest in Resaca. The Federals advanced through Snake Creek Gap as planned, but when General James B. McPherson, in command of this part of the operation, called a halt and studied the town through his field glasses, he saw a lot more rebel soldiers than he had expected to see. The hour was growing late in the day, too, so instead of pressing on to Resaca, McPherson ordered his men to fall back to Snake Creek Gap and bivouac there for the night. Although McPherson tried to mask his movements, that evening Confederate scouts discovered his presence and galloped back to Dalton, bearing the news of this threat to Johnston's headquarters. The Confederate commander responded by shifting three divisions from John Bell Hood's corps to Resaca to reinforce the men under Canty, who were there already. Sherman's plan was ruined. Yet even with the knowledge he now possessed, Johnston did not move sufficiently to counter the Federal thrust through Snake Creek Gap. Concluding that this was a feint, like the attack on Rocky Face Ridge, the Confederate commander pulled back two divisions from the force he had sent to Resaca and positioned them halfway between the two railroad towns. Johnston was still convinced that the Yankees' main attack would come from the north, above Dalton. Meanwhile, Sherman was furious when he learned that McPherson had failed to take Resaca. He moved even more of his army to the south, leaving only a small force in front of the Rocky Face to keep up the desultory skirmishing. Several days passed as Johnston grew more concerned about what Sherman might be up to, and with good reason. When a cavalry patrol around the northern end of Rocky Face encountered no Yankees whatsoever, Johnston realized his miscalculation. Sherman was trying to get around him to the south and west and cut off his army from supplies and reinforcements. Johnston would have to move fast to prevent this. The orders went out in the middle of the night. Get to Resaca and don't waste any time doing it. The Confederates could only hope that they would arrive before the enemy did. "What did I tell you about shoes?" Corey asked as he and Abner Strayhorn marched through the slowly graying dawn, along with thousands of other footsore and weary troops. Yeah, I know, the Tennessean said, wincing as his bare feet left little bloody spots in the dirt of the road from blisters that had burst. Old General sure had us moving lickety-split since last night. Indeed, the troops had marched all night down the road from Dalton to Resaca. They were on the outskirts of the town now, and as the shapes of the buildings began to be visible through the early morning mist, officers cantered along the column and called orders that had the soldiers swinging to the right. Some followed narrow lanes, while others cut through the yards that belonged to the houses of the settlement. Corey and Abner walked by one of these and saw a curtain twitch. The face of an elderly woman peered out, eyes wide with fear. Corey smiled at her, hoping that would reassure her. She would be protected against the marauding Yankees. He didn't know if her expression eased or not, because he and Abner had to press on, hurriedly, to keep up with the rest of their company. What were the Yankees doing this far south, anyway? They should be stopped farther north in Virginia and Tennessee, Corey thought. The invaders should never have been allowed to get this far. After all, this was the southern homeland. It had to be defended. Even in his own head, the words rang hollow. He had started out hating the Yankees as much as anybody south of the Mason-Dixon line, and he still thought they were morally and constitutionally wrong to have invaded the Confederacy. He would fight them on that basis, fight them as long as there was breath in his body. But somewhere, somehow, There should have been another way. The firebrands on both sides could have settled their differences without resorting to a war that had ripped the country apart and muddied the ground with lakes of blood and torn loved ones from each other's arms. He had seen too much of it. Lord help him, he wanted to put his rifle down and just walk away. He wouldn't do that, of course. He was in the fight to the bitter end. The old Brannan stubbornness would permit nothing less. But he wanted it to be over. He felt disloyal to Colonel Thompson, to Lieutenant Hamilton Ryder, to all the other friends who had fallen in the service of the cause. But it was true. Enough was enough. But not yet. The full price had not yet been paid. The Yankees were still out there, collecting the toll. The troops moved onto high ground just west of Resaca that commanded a broad, swampy valley through which a little creek meandered. Corey looked north and south as the line was established. He couldn't see the end of the line in either direction. Hardee's corps held the center, with Hood in the north and General Leonidas Polk, the fighting bishop, to the south. Polk had arrived with the rest of his corps a few days earlier to help with the defense of Resaca. Corey peered across the valley and saw the Yankees over there, several hundred yards away. They weren't doing anything, just sort of milling around, getting ready for battle, like their counterparts in Gray and Butternut on this side of the creek. "When do you reckon they'll be coming?" Abner asked as he rested the butt of his rifle on the ground and leaned on the barrel. "When they're good and ready," Corey said. That didn't happen right away. The sun rose fully, and the morning dragged by. Officers on both sides were busy supervising the preparations for battle, but in the front lines the foot soldiers stood, or sat, or squatted, and waited. Some played cards, others talked. A few even sat down with their backs against tree trunks and fell asleep. Corey surprised himself by dozing off. He had thought that he was too keyed up with anticipation to sleep. But as he leaned against a tree, his eyelids drooped and then closed, and he let himself go. He came awake with a start as Abner jogged his shoulder. "They're coming, Corey," he said. "Better get up now." Corey's muscles had stiffened from sitting on the ground. He used his rifle to brace himself as he pushed up to his feet. Peering across the valley, he saw the Union infantry advancing. They couldn't run across the brushy, swampy ground that was dotted with dead trees, but they advanced at a steady pace, striding forward toward the Confederate line. Somewhere a cannon boomed, and a shell burst among the Yankees. That was all the signal the men needed, because the roar of artillery crescendoed until it seemed to fill the entire world. The bombardment swept viciously across the valley, scattering the blue-clad soldiers like tenpins. The ones who survived kept coming, though. They moved faster now, despite the rough terrain. Corey and Abner dropped to one knee and lifted their rifles. Two men in a line of thousands who all did the same thing. Corey cocked his weapon and sighted over the barrel at the attacking Yankees. They were close enough for him to make out individual figures, and the air was not yet so clogged with smoke that he couldn't see what he was looking at. He settled his sights on a barrel-chested man with a ginger-colored beard and pressed the trigger. The Yankee stumbled as Corey's shot struck him, but he stayed on his feet. Holding his rifle at a slant across his chest, the man trotted forward. Sunlight glinted on the bayonet fixed to the barrel of the rifle. Corey started to reload, wondering what would happen if the wounded Yankee made it this far. Would the man come right to him, guided by some eerie, unknowable power to the man who had sent that chunk of lead ripping into his body? Would they settle things between them, bayonet against bayonet, hand to hand? Corey handled the chore of reloading automatically, without taking his eyes off the ginger-bearded man. But he finally had to look down to place the percussion cap on the rifle's nipple, and when he looked up again, the Yankee was gone. Probably he had fallen, struck by more bullets, perhaps, and now he was just one of those huddled shapes lying face down on the ground as his life ran out of him. Corey found another target and fired again. Surprisingly, some of the Yankees made it all the way across the valley and surged up the high ground into the middle of the Confederate line.